Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Steve Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Bradley is making a move. It has come down to this. Bradley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Bradley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome to the ninth episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Once again, Chris Chavez here with Alex Lohr and Mitch Kastoff. Busy week of track action as we got some results from conference, which is all over the country, lots of team battles. We're going to talk about those. USA's happened on Saturday and Sunday. So that was it's some very fast times thrown down in Boston that we'll hit on. Grant Fisher runs 404. We'll discuss what we think that might mean for his future. Gambling in the Olympics is going to be a big topic. What are our thoughts? Maybe talk about some races that might have some really cool odds. Drake Relay's had their announcements for April. That some great fields assembled there. And yeah, we might talk about the color of the dress that everyone's talking about, but maybe not too extensively. So we'll start off with Alex on the ground in Seattle. What was that like? Anything that really stood out to you out there?
Well, and Seattle has a little different perspective on this week. It was conference action, but it's MPSF. So in all reality, it boils down. I don't know how much teams really take stock in winning an MPSF title. That being said, USC women and Oregon men were pretty dominant. But it kind of turns into a last chance meet, let's be honest. The things that I took away from that are, you know, what are Oregon's options going into NCAAs? Because they have a lot right now. Their DMR won and set the fastest time in the NCAA like a joke. I mean, they took it so easy. Jenkins was on the close, Chez was on the opener, and they looked so easy, weren't even remotely pushed. After the 3K, they actually have five guys in the 3K. Will they use all five of those guys? I don't think they'll scratch anybody out of the 3K before NCAAs, since it's the last event, basically at NCAAs before the 4x4. So if they're really scrapping and clawing for points, they could put somebody in there. But how are they going to use Jenkins and Chez, right? So is Chez going to do the DMR and the mile and the 3K, or is he just going to do, like a mile 3K double? I think the better move is probably not run him in the DMR because they can replace him, get guaranteed a couple points out of the DMR, but definitely win mile 3K when comparatively you could maybe win all three of those events. They're going to take the guaranteed two winners and a couple points out of the DMR. So that was really impressive. The other things I thought was impressive was Isaac Yorks, the kid from Washington, who actually fell down last week and then so was having a great race, popped back up the next day, came back and ran sub four this weekend. He takes down some big scalps. He's a big muscular guy. He ran 357.8. We're going to see him at NCAAs. But, you know, that obviously wasn't the only thing to talk about. There's a couple awesome collegiate marks this weekend, and I think Mitch has got a couple to highlight for us.
I'm trying to furiously type up all my notes. I had them originally, but, you know, I'm just a perfectionist. I like to reorder them. Let's go with some big collegiate records. Emily Sisson, we've known you've been good. Man, I wish you had cross-country eligibility. You've been on the roads. You've been killing it on the roads. And you come to your Big East Championship meet at the Armory, and you're on 15-12-22. 15-12 indoors. Let's just say collegiate record. That's number three all time behind, she moves ahead of Molly Huddle. She's behind Shalane and Marla Runyon now. So, you know, that's some big company. She won by a minute and 8 seconds. She did it all by herself. Get this girl in a grace. Other big marks, Alabama's Ramona Burchell. She broke the collegiate record in the 60, 7.08. Just ahead of the old record by 0.01. Doesn't matter if you break it by 2 seconds like Emily or less or 0.01 like Ramona. It still counts. And then we got my boy, a big man from Wisconsin. I've seen this guy pick up 4 kegs and at once and throw it over a house. His name is Michael Learman. He broke the men's weight throw. He had 8, I'm gonna do it in feet, just so people understand. But it's 83 feet 11 inches, 11 1/4 inch. So if you want the metric, I think it's 25.09. So 3 collegiate records this weekend. I mean, conferences bring out the best in people.
I was going to mention 2 more quick things. As you're talking about some Big Ten love, Leah O'Connor had a great weekend. Leah O'Connor, you know, she won steeple at NCAAs last year, solid and cross, you know, leads her team to NCAA title. But, you know, I don't know if we've really, like, it's just been this, like, okay, how good is Leah O'Connor really? She's pretty dang good. Word on the street is she split a 4.25 this weekend. I don't know how locked in that is, who if that was hand-timed, who took that split, but that is unbelievable. And then she comes back and wins the all-out mile title. I saw a quick Instagram video of her in the home stretch, and she was rolling, looked really strong, not a soul in the area around her. I think she made a pretty good statement this weekend. I can't wait to see the battle between her and Colleen Quigley as the next couple months move on. And then I just like to point out that the conference battles, the big one that people are going to look at is SECs. And it's going to be Florida men won by a lot. Like, they won by a lot. And I was really surprised to, you know, I know they're good. But usually the Florida, it's more outdoors, but Florida maybe doesn't win SECs, but they have such a tight-knit pack that's so good that they win NCAAs. This year, they come into conference and dominate. So that was a surprise to me. I think we need to talk about one other guy who performed well at altitude. Anyone know where I'm going?
That's Christian Serratos. Pulls off the triple, which everyone was like kind of talking about. It's like, how's this guy going to do this? Why do it? Why make such a drastic decision before conference? You're risking injury pretty much in every race. So DMR 800 mile. And then he comes back and runs in the 4x4, which is something that I learned afterwards. And Ben Rosario, who I'm assuming is probably there. So he won the DMR, I believe, anchored them. And that was 10:08:27, first for that. 800, won it at 1:51:33. And a mile, 4:07:28, all at 7,000 feet. It's pretty impressive. This kid is really good. Really funny story, because I spoke with him earlier in the week, because might have a piece coming out on him earlier this week, just a tease right now. But he got a call from Diego Estrada. They're both from Salinas, California. And Estrada was like congratulating him for everything he's done. And then, you know, offered up, you know, some advice. He's the current U.S. half marathon champion. He knows a thing or two, had some success at the NCAA level. He gave him a call and said, hey, man, I don't think it's really a smart decision for you to triple because, you know, you might get hurt. Serratos didn't ignore the message, because he knew this was an NAU guy, probably looking for Serratos to back off, you know, taking these points here and there. That's a really funny story between those two. Serratos is, I asked him about the rounds, because that's the big question that everyone's talking about now, is how is this kid going to make it through the rounds? His mentality, he's like, hey, I'm not the only one who has to go through these rounds. Then the counter argument is, you know, Chez has been there before. Chad Noel is going to be really good. Kidder's going to be there. These guys have gone through rounds. And he's like, you know what? When I'm in practice, I just visualize, you know, these guys in front of me when I have one rep to go. I like the mentality that this kid has, and it's really interesting because he joined Twitter after, you know, all his success, and I feel like there's a lot of attention on him right now, and he's still focused, and he showed that. I was actually a little concerned going into conference to see, you know, I spoke with him for a while, people have been talking about him for a while, whether this is going to get to his head a little bit, but he's got the blinders on. Next stop for him is Fayetteville.
I have one last point, and this is who to watch for over the next couple of years. I just need to have this in the record. Shay Martinez from BYU. Look her up. Watch her run. You will fully understand why I'm putting this on the record right now.
All right.
She will win. She will win stuff.
All right. There you have it. You guys are going to have to do your research there. But it's really funny because I was looking through the results, and, you know, you think Big Sky, who else would Serratos have to put up with? Footsum actually did a really good job in the 5K, and then he came back in the mile. I think he was just maybe a second or two behind Serratos. So Footsum's, you know, carrying over that cross-country strength. But so it was pretty good conference weekend overall. I'll do a quick shout-out to the Marquette Golden Eagles for finishing second in the Big East. Wally Ellenson almost jumped an NCAA leader for the high jump. It was surprising. I didn't expect that. But I guess there were some collegiates that were in action on conference one day and then came back the next day and competed at USA's. Some East Coast kids did that. Let's talk about Boston a little bit. What were some of the performances that really stood out to you? I'll go to you on this one, Mitch.
Oh, wow, just throwing the ball straight at me. Biggest thing, it was a good weekend. I enjoyed watching all the races like I normally do. Nothing that really comes to the forefront for me. Something I did enjoy watching was Ryan Hill. I mean, he's had some weird last 2 years, up and down, like total high, total low. And it's good to see him finally get his quote unquote first real national title. He had to outkick some teammates for it. I'm sure that will make for some fun banter and workouts later on. But yeah, he dropped a big last lap. And the reason I bring up this race is because we've seen him run some pretty incredible 3Ks against the world's best, Gebre Meskel, Gebre Marion. But a 25.77 last lap, if he is there with 400 to go, and let's just say I can't use the race because it's trademarked, but let's just say the big one, you know, he's got really good wheels. And so give him a year, give him 2 years to develop, and, you know, Bowerman's got a star in the making right there.
What about Lauren Wallace? I mean, didn't she completely stun all of us?
It passes over my mind because I still can't believe it happened. Lauren Wallace, holding lane one. Good for you. She used to be a 200-meter runner in high school. I remember talking to her West Regional 2 years ago when she made it in. Drew Wartenberg. Great work with that one. You know, Girl who's stepping up just a little out of her comfort zone in the 1,000. She's a pure 4.8 runner running the K. And she's in lane, I have to watch the race again, but she was hanging in lane one, and she's falling back, she was in fifth, and then just that inside move, just holding the lane of champions. That's what I called that. So Wazelle, technically, I think it's their second national title. Kate Grace won the Liberty Road Mile 2 years ago, year and a half ago. Anyway, first track title, good for her. She's a good one. I like her a lot.
I think one of the big races, I think, for me, I think I really enjoyed the 600 on the women's side. And I know Alex is going to chime in on this as well. But, yeah, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, mainstream attention. And the great storyline to follow would have been if Elisa Montano won. And it happened. And she's looking fit. She really dropped the baby pounds really fast. 6 months later. So she's... She did a great job, got the job done. But I really felt for Ajay Wilson. It's so unfortunate, and she was unstoppable throughout the entire season. It's But I know what this does. This absolutely adds fuel for outdoor season, and yeah, you know, that's it's already deep 800 team to make for Beijing, and for Ajay to have a little bit more fuel for the fire, it's gonna be scary. Al, your take on that race?
Well, I think that's a good point, Chris. I would never for a second take away how great Montano has come back. She's unbelievable. It's truly astonishing how strong she's come back. Is Ajay the best 800 meter runner in the U.S.? Yes, obviously. You can't argue that. She was ranked number two in the world last year. She ran faster than anybody in the world last year. I don't think she needs any fire, honestly. She's pretty dialed in. She knows, and she's pretty mature as far as like goals and what each race means. I know she's only 20, but just talking to her, she's very aware of long-term plans and what each thing means. It sucks that she fell, but she'll get over it. Coming back to life in the stripes, Robbie Andrews wins the title. You gotta give it to the guy. There's been some doubters, but and when you look at a 1,000 meters, it's like Robbie Andrews is in 1,000. Why would he not win? I mean, this guy is bread and butter. So back with Vidge, gets a national title under his belt. Good for him. I think that was a nice day for him and a lot of people who've been waiting for him to bust through the door again.
You know, when Mo ran his 2 mile world record last weekend, I saw Robbie post a picture from Oxy. And it's funny to forget that, you know, him and his black wife beater was so close to beating Mo that day. And I will say how far apart their careers have gone. But yeah, it's good to see Robbie win again.
Plus the kiss from Merber at the very end was just an added incentive to the whole thing. And you rocked it. If I had the stream up on my laptop, I would have screenshotted that immediately. Great job on that one, Mitch, with the tweet. If you guys haven't seen it, Mitch tweeted out a picture of the kiss with the caption, "This could be us, but you playing." Excellent work.
I was sitting with some Columbia Lions and you know, Merber Nation was going on, so we had to keep our eyes on him. And, you know, goes for the slow motion kiss, a class act, national television. How could you not want to capture that moment forever?
Another thing is Shannon Roberry pulled off the double, and I think she might be – I think it's less than a handful of women have done it at USA's. And I don't think it – Jenny might have been the last one. I forget. Jesse Squires tweeted out a list of it before. I don't know if it was Jenny, but don't quote me on that one. But, yeah, I mean, she won the 2 mile in 9:43 after winning the mile. Man, that was a really slow pace up for the first couple laps. But, I mean, what can you expect? It's a championship race, but 40-second 200 for the first one, high 30s for the next couple. Do you know how many wins Ronda Rousey probably would have been able to put together in those laps? That's the one joke that I kind of held back on Twitter during that race. But Shannon Roberry's fit. Would have been awesome to see someone like Jenny in these races, but obviously she's doing what she has to be in gold medal shape for outdoor season. But Jordan Hsieh was right there in the mix. I think the one guy who I think I would give props to from all of outdoor from indoor season would be Ben Blankenship, because he's back, he's healthy. It's really good to see him out there in the mix, and I know that probably does a lot for his confidence. You know, 2 years ago when I was there in the summer, you know, he didn't really, whenever I would talk to him, he'd be like, well, you know, why are you talking to me? It's like, I'm nothing really special. He hasn't really accomplished too much, but now he does have kind of that confidence, and so I think we're gonna see a different Ben Blankenship during outdoor season. Guys, I mean, who are some of the runners that you think maybe didn't come up with the win, but can probably have a big benefit from indoor season that we haven't seen recently?
Okay, well, he has had a great indoor season, kind of under the radar. Alik Harris.
Yes.
He's a national champ, won Milrose. And it, because it seems like there's one dude every hurdler every year that's like on fire, and he's the guy to beat. And right now, it looks like it's going to be Elite Karras. And he's a really young guy. How his indoor success is going to translate to outdoor, I have no idea. But the guy is as more successful as a pro than he ever was at USC. He's on fire right now. Could he be the first guy to break 13 in the last couple, in a long time? I don't know. Is he the hurdler to beat right now? Yes.
It's interesting that you say that, because when I think of some guys from indoor, I think of guys like Omosagi, who from last year. And it's really tough to with some of these guys. And that's another interesting name to follow during outdoor season, because Osagi doesn't really put it together during outdoor season, and it's already going to be a really the men's hurdles is going to be another tough team to make, just because you'll have Aries Merritt, you'll have, we don't know how it would, what shape Aries is in. I know he raced recently though. That's another tough team. If you think about it, it's a mind-blowing fact when you remember 2012, David Oliver didn't make the team to the Olympics, and then comes back the next year and wins gold in Moscow. It's that crazy of an event that I wouldn't put it past, Elite Karras making a team. So good pick in that one, Alex. That's another one to keep tabs on.
I'm going to flip over, which is great that it's a really good transition. Like, we actually planned that beforehand, but if you're listening to right now, we did not. I want to go to the hardest. I'm going to say it's the hardest team to make for the United States, and it's the women's hurdles.
Yes.
And I'm going to go with Jasmine Stowers.
Ooh.
We've seen her at LSU just tearing it up. I don't know how many times she's won at SEC. It's like 4 or 5. And she is someone who we've seen the rise of a collegiate, then turn pro, and then take the world on. Am I saying she's going to pull the same thing as Brianna Rollins? No, absolutely not. Am I saying she's going to maybe compete for one of those three spots for Beijing or Rio? Absolutely. But to do that, you have to dethrone someone. You have to usurp someone's spot who is not just good, not just national class, but someone who's going to compete for a world or Olympic medal. And so, what's her improvement rate going to be like? I'm not sure, but it's going to be – that's someone to watch.
Nick Sicardi and I were talking about that actually, same exact event, because I have so I spoke with Dawn Harper Nelson. I'll probably put out a Q&A with her this week about the women's hurdles, and I went down a list of 6 names for four women that are going to go to China this summer. If you count Brianna Rollins, because she has the bye being the defending world champion, there's 3 spots and 6 women at the time when I spoke to her. Now there's 7. We're going to have Lolo. We're going to have now I'm blanking all these names out. Kelly Wells, Dawn Harper,
Sharika Nelvis.
Yeah, exactly. Christy Caslin was another one. Queen Harrison. Just all these names for 3 spots. Eugene is going to be. It's going to be a really happy moment for some people, and it's going to be a really sad moment when you can't make the team. But I think definitely those are that might be the toughest team to make. There's just a few of those. I think the U.S. team in general is just always really deep. So that good picks from both you guys, and I believe she's probably training out there at LSU with Lolo Jones and. So there's definitely some good training partners out there for that. Moving on. So a year from now, while we're talking about really fast times, a person to watch on the collegiate level will be Grant Fisher in a Stanford uniform, probably running at MPSF around this time of year. Runs 4:04 this weekend at the Michigan State meet. Didn't watch the race, but saw results. Probably very dominant. What do you guys think of when you see the time 4:04 and Grant Fisher's name? Immediately, the first thought is sub-4 chances. So where do you put those at right now?
Well, honestly, I'm putting them at pretty good. I mean, 4:04 in February for a high schooler is crazy. We've known that Grant is the guy to beat. The kid almost went sub-4 last year at the Dream Mile. He's training to go sub-4. And to win, big time meets. I think he can do it. I'm going to try to do my best to put some context around him and some guys to help him get to that level. You know, we've seen the last couple of years where a defending champ of the Dream Isle, you know, at the end of the year has come in and maybe not won. But Grant seems a little different than a Montoya, maybe. I think his chances are really, really good. His coach, I talked to him in January. His focus is to do this. He wants to get this done. And, you know, 404, you guys, 404 in February. It is unbelievable. And with no competition, put him in the right race. I think he's going to get it done. I think he's the best high schooler we've seen, American high schooler we've seen since Virzbickas.
I hate to put the title of sub-4 on another high school kid. And at the same time, I love doing it. And so as an old high school teacher, absolutely not. I would never put that kind of pressure on a kid. As a pundit creating a podcast, yes, I'm going to put that title on you. Yes. Do it, yes, Grant. I don't know. I've gone back and watched the old Virzbickas 3 mile race, and it's pretty magical. And it's weird, and it's funny because that race is going to get better with age. Right now, I just feel like people saw it happen and were like, oh, cool, like Lucas ran sub-4. Let's wait 20 years. Let's wait a few more, maybe 5, and see how that holds up. And I really do think Grant can go sub-4. I did put some hype behind the Montoya show, and I haven't seen him around at all, unfortunately. That's a whole different story. And who was the other one that was in the Dream Mile? Andres Arroyo, who's running great right now. So good for him. But Grant...
Sorrell won it 2 years ago.
Yeah, I just see a more like a more total package with Grant. And so, yeah, let's go. Why not? Just go for it, man. I'll rabbit you.
I mean, you guys, the guys that are going to be involved, I mean, the guy that got second last year was only a junior too, Matthew Matten. These are two 401 guys coming back into this, and he's going to be pushed by there's some Michigan rivalry in there. So it's not like he's going to be lax all summer and just rest on his laurels. He's got a lot of competition in Michigan, so I don't think it's something where he's just going to kind of float his outdoor season. He's going to keep grinding. I think he'll be ready to go.
And his coach is actually, I've tried to speak with him before. He's got the blinders on when it comes to the sub-4. It's going to take some time. That's not the focus for indoor season. He knows that's what's... The main thing on the checklist is going to be for outdoor season. So I like that focus that he's got right now, and everything seems to be going according to plan. And you guys pretty much took the words out of my mouth. I was going to make the same exact comparison when it comes to that kind of passing of the torch from one year to the next. With Montoya, it didn't really go over so well in his second Dream Mile with the sub-4 chase. Yet there is definitely a different element to Grant Fisher, and I think he's going to get it done. The fact that we didn't see him over race during indoor season was a positive. So I'm interested to see how conservative they might be towards the start of outdoor season with him, and then ultimately what that schedule is going to look like for his peak during outdoor season, hopefully in New York. I think Stanford's got a really good guy coming in next year, and no matter what the result is going to be, if it's 4:401 or 3:59 again, this guy is someone who to watch for years to come. So I think you could bet on Grant Fisher being a star. But now you can bet on the Olympics from Vegas. I got that transition down there. Vegas, there's one sports book that has put the odds out already on a couple different sports. Obviously, you can bet, you can make some money on the Olympics, you know, when you're overseas. But now you could probably do it again in the U.S. So the first odds I think I saw were Usain Bolt -200 for the 100-meter dash, and the field had I forget what the odds were. I think +175 or something like that. It's some pretty good odds, but the thing is, it's like I wouldn't put any money on that right now because we're still over a year out. We don't know how he's going to do in Beijing, so it's kind of risky. You guys are really pumped about this.
I mean, come on. It's like the dark. It's like this thing that has been hanging over our sport, and we've just been. It's like the elephant in the room. Let's pretend like it doesn't exist. Why not? I'm really happy about it. I mean, as a sport, as a fan, as just loving sports in general. I was there at the Olympics, and I saw the hype. What could happen to our sport when you can bet on it? It's so great. I mean, I want somebody to come on this show and tell us why it's not a good idea. You can throw the corruption number out there at me all day. Every other sport is doing it. Our sport is losing out on not doing it. You guys, Ronda Riley, that fight lasted 14 seconds. So all we needed to do is put the context around it and maybe some betting, and it'll appeal to everyone. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a huge win for everyone, and I hope it catches on, and I hope it's viable and doable for everyone across the country to take part of. Because people are interested on horse betting. Why would they not want to bet on human racing?
Humans. People love to hunt. People love to hunt animals. People love to hunt humans. I see what your thought process is there, Alex. But I don't want people to get the wrong idea about me, because, you know, I'm a pretty straight-laced guy. I don't have any vices. So I don't want to implicate myself or anyone else and just say that I may or may not like to bet on sports every now and then. I went to school in Delaware, and when I was a junior, they legalized state betting. And so the casino was a 15-minute drive from campus. Well, let's just say, putting money on things... I care about running, and I care about runners. But I have no intrinsic value with that kind of thing. But if I put down $5, I care about Nick Simmons a whole lot more. He was like 8-1 on some websites for Daegu last summer. And when Chris Chavez was sleeping on my couch, some of us were convinced that Nick was going to win. And 8-1 is pretty good if you think someone's going to win. And so... may or may not have some inter-office bets with guys who don't even watch it, who just know who Nick is, don't even know anything about his running. But for those 1 minute and 40-something seconds, they are glued to the screen. They're just watching one guy. And the thing is, you need the parity in running. Because when I see some races, you go like, if these three guys win, I'm pretty happy. But if you can single out one guy and make everyone else a villain... because they're going to make you lose money, it's going to make people cheer a lot harder for some people.
It's the same exact point about that added level of excitement. So now, while track is on TV these last couple days, I've had it on in the living room, and my roommates come into the room, and they're like, wow, you can watch track on TV. And so they start watching. Then they ask the question, it's like, wait, can we bet on this? And they don't know anything about track. So it was, and so what they ended up doing was just putting dollars. They put a dollar on a certain runner. I didn't help them out with like who was good, who had the fastest time, but they were really cheering hard for. They did it for Milrose as well. I wasn't even there. They just decided to turn it on and do it. They were like rooting for St. Anthony's in the 4x8. It was an added level of excitement. They catch on to the sport. So that was pretty cool to see. It's going to be interesting. I was actually trying to give thought into what do you guys think is the race that is probably the most unpredictable when it comes to, putting down money on a medalist. Because if we think about it, I'm going to go with the 1500 because if you would have put money on a guy like McLoofie, that like from the start of the Olympics, and let's say it closed before, when you saw what happened in 800, all of a sudden you're just like, well, what's this guy going to do in the 1500? There's so many different elements that go into it that I feel like you can win a lot. You could, and then guys like Leo, who if you put some money on him as well, I mean, it was the 1500's a toss up when you're at the Olympic level, because some guys are stronger during rounds, some guys are pure speed and save it for the final. So I'm going to go with the 1500 as like probably the one of the more fun races to bet on. Maybe the marathon. I think that's one that Alex might like.
Well, yeah. Well, I would say the marathon, because it has the most amount of variables. If we're looking at variables like you can't predict, it would be marathon and maybe steeplechase, right? But the thing that people will love to bet on the most, because it's the most tangible and like immediate satisfaction, win or lose type thing, is going to be high jump. It's going to be, I mean, you don't have to know anything about sports. You're going to know if that bar fell off or not. You know, I think that will probably get the most buzz.
We gave him two shouts last weekend. Might as well give him another this week. I know that Kevin Liao may have looked at some odds in London 2012 at Miss Begitter Barrett, who I don't know where she is right now. But Laura, what you were telling me, like 15-1 before the final?
Something ridiculous. Like something, it's like, did nobody research this woman?
So, hey, you wanna get behind an American? And then all of a sudden, she's in the medal contention. 15-1 is looking like a pretty good number for you to grab your TV and punch your hand right through it. Because the high jump is a terrifying event to watch.
Just imagine being that one guy who maybe watched the 2009 New York City Marathon on TV, and that's the only name you knew was Meb, and being betting on the marathon at the Olympics in 2012. Imagine how pumped. Well, first of all, the odds are stacked always against Meb for some reason, which is, I think, when you it now that it might be legalized, I feel like they might have to throw that into the mix. Like, yeah, you know, this guy always goes against the odds. Imagine being that one guy who watched the 2009 New York City Marathon. You only know Meb, and you're like, all right, I'll put down, you know, $100 on Keflezighi, and then all of a sudden you see he's like in the running for the medals at the Olympics. I feel like there's no better feeling than that. So like the marathon is definitely another one of those. But if you have the thing is with 2016, if you're gonna have a guy like Dennis Kometo and Wilson Kipsang, those two guys are probably gonna be really, really have really good odds, and they're really good. So that might make it tough in the marathon because you're gonna have some two big names right away. But Mitch, yeah, so is your event the high jump as well, or do you want to add another event that might be really cool?
No, my bet's always the high jump. The high jump for everything.
Pole vault?
Yeah, but that's got the high jump, I feel like at least more people are going for world record, more people are winning different meets. It might just be like two guys, it might just be three. In the pole vault, I feel like I got my one guy. I know who I'm gonna bet on. There's not much fun for me there.
I feel like one of the events that could cause the most heartbreak would probably be the hurdles, because one bad mistake, and it's kind of over. If you think about, putting down money on guys like someone like Lolo Jones in 2008, and then all of a sudden she clips the second to last hurdle. The money was almost there for anyone who could have bet on her. The hurdles probably cause a lot of heartbreak. But I'm glad to see that we're all really excited about gambling in the Olympics. So I guess we're kind of cutting it on time pretty soon, even though we don't have a time limit on a podcast. But we're going to close it off, as always, on a fun note. I saw blue and black. What did you guys see?
Oh, God. The thing that's weird... Okay. I saw white and gold immediately, but like as I turned it and showed it to my wife, I saw it change to black and blue, and I freaked out, and I don't know if she totally understood why I was freaking out so much, and it was like, honey, isn't the internet awesome? And it turns into something not awesome because it won't go away now. But for the record, I saw white and gold.
I saw llamas in the morning, in the afternoon. Here's the real incredible statistic. That article generated 37 million views on BuzzFeed, and then the Wired article that explained the science of why you saw the two things had maybe 33 million. So I wish people could care. Well, imagine if people cared about, you know, real stuff instead of the dress. And then think of how much better of a place the world would be.
I know about this dress than I know about Kiev. current situation.
Or the CPAC.
And if you don't know where that is, then you're an idiot and you need to get off the freaking internet and stop looking at stuff like the dress. That's in Ukraine.
I will say, to close it all out, the tweet related to the dress that I think wins it all was Kaz Loxham. I think it might have been 2 days ago. Said right before USA's, tweets a picture of his uniform, like any runner does, and says, "Can't wait to show off Brooks Running's new black and blue kits." And it's a picture of the one, the one that they always wear, the one that's neon green.
Oh, come on. Everyone made the same joke, Chris. Don't give more love to a guy who just broke an American record. Congratulations, Blake Griffin. You had the tweet of the weekend. You said, "Forget the dress. What color am I?" I don't know. I don't know. Good for you, man.
There you have it. On that note, we'll close out episode 9 of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. I saw we might have got a few of those already. All feedback is appreciated. And we'll catch you again next week, episode 10 of the Running Our Mouths podcast.